treating patients and participants, does it matter whether it's research or public health practice? Well, my answer is yes, it does. Distinctions between public health practice and human subjects research are attributable in part to their very different legal and ethical traditions. Public health practice, unlike research, is supported by a constitutional, statutory, and regulatory legal environment that empowers public health officials, authorizes the performance of general and specific public health functions, and provides for oversight and accountability for public health activities. The provision of public health services in the United States has its basis in the U.S. Constitution. Primary responsibility for protecting the public's health is held by the states and local governments through delegated authority. The 10th Amendment reserves to states extensive and broad powers. Commonly known as police powers, they represent the inherent authority of the state to enact laws and promulgate regulations to protect, preserve, and promote the health, safety, morals, and general welfare of the people. As these public health powers are reserved to the states, federal public health agencies do not have similarly broad authority to act in the interests of the public's health. Unlike the broad powers to protect the public's health, human subjects research is regulated through the federal common rule. The common rule, codified in a series of federal regulations, establishes the legal and ethical principles for performance of human subjects research and applies to virtually all research involving human subjects that is conducted by or with funding from federal agencies. For the most activities determined to be human subjects research, the common rule requires advance review by an institutional review board or medical ethics board. The boundaries and distinctions between public health practice under state public health authority and human subjects research under the common rule must be clearly understood. It's imperative that the distinctions are explicitly articulated to preserve the integrity of appropriate oversight, accountability, authority, and responsibility of both systems. Exemption from IRB review of public health practice does not mean exemption from accountability and performance standards. So to summarize, there are key differences in the legal authority and oversight for public health practice and human subjects research. Misclassification of activities leads to multiple complications, and both systems working together provide robust oversight, protection, and accountability. There are many similarities between practice and research. Both may entail the collection and use of identifiable health information. Both are conducted in a manner that seeks to protect individuals, and both may be justified as laudable communal activities that further the public good. But public health practice is not human subjects research. And you've already heard, the issue then is, so if public health practice doesn't fall under IRB review, then how can we be certain that those public health people are actually protecting individuals? Before going further, let's define research and practice. There's actually an entire section of the Belmont Report, Part A, that's titled Boundaries Between Practice and Research. The section begins, quote, "It is important to distinguish between biomedical and behavioral research on the one hand and the practice of accepted therapy on the other in order to know what activities ought to undergo review for the protection of human subjects of research." The Belmont Report describes research as an activity designed to test a hypothesis, permit conclusions to be drawn, and thereby to develop or contribute to generalizable knowledge. Research is usually described in a formal protocol that sets forth an objective and a set of procedures designed to reach that objective. And as you heard, there's only one legal definition of research in the United States, and it's found in the Common Rule, or 45 CFR 46. It's also referenced in the HIPAA Privacy Act of 1996. And that definition is a systematic investigation, including research, development, testing, and evaluation, designed to develop or contribute to generalizable knowledge. And the intent of research is to test a new hypothesis and seek to generalize the findings or acquired knowledge beyond the activity's participants. So the Belmont Report defines practice as interventions that are designed solely to enhance the well-being of an individual patient or client and that have a reasonable expectation of success. The purpose of medical or behavioral practice is to provide diagnosis, preventive treatment, or therapy to particular individuals. So if we turn to 45 CFR 46 and see what the definition of practice is, there isn't one. They did define research, but they didn't also define practice. And so the intent of practice is to assure the conditions in of public health practice is to assure the conditions in which people can be healthy through public health programs primarily aimed at preventing known or suspected injuries, diseases, or other conditions, or promoting the health of the community that are authorized by and accountable to the public. The public health powers of the states are extensive, rooted in their inherent sovereign powers to protect the peace, safety, health, and general welfare of the citizens. So the foundations of public health practice are specific legal authorization at the federal, state, or local levels, and include a corresponding governmental duty to perform the activity to protect the public's health. And it involves direct performance or oversight by a governmental public health authority and accountability to the public for its performance. So the legal authority for public health practice is grounded in constitutionally approved authority of government to protect the public's health, safety, and general welfare. And human subjects research is grounded in the principles of the Federal Common Rule that focuses on protecting individuals in the pursuit of knowledge. Public health surveillance systems in the United States are established as an exercise of states' police powers. The legal authority of states to exercise their sovereign police powers to protect public health through establishing surveillance was affirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court decision in 1977 in Whalen v. Roe. And the Supreme Court established three standards that must be met. One, there has to be a valid public health purpose. Two, the collection of the information is limited to public health departments, and there must be adequate statutory confidentiality provisions. Congress passed the Cancer Registries Amendment Act of 1993. When they did so, they required that states comply with a list of provisions in order to qualify for federal funding. These requirements included providing indemnity for healthcare providers who reported cases under state reporting requirements, providing indemnity to the healthcare providers for allowing public health authorities to examine patient medical records to extract information needed for the cancer registry, and third, and significantly, to provide explicit mechanisms for researchers outside the public health agency to be able to access the data in the cancer registry for the purposes of research. The legal authority for public health practice has also been affirmed by the Office of Human Research Protection, which has specifically acknowledged that the acquisition of identifiable health data or specimens by public health authorities for, quote, legitimate public health purposes, unquote, is not research. And in addition, the HIPAA privacy rule provides different rules for the disclosure of protected health information for public health and research purposes, and expressly permits protected health information to be shared with public health authorities. Now, I have a slide of what I call stub toes in this area. One is the issue of exempt research. A second engages in the issues of principal investigators. A third is subject selection. The fourth is informed consent. The fifth is that there are different standards and status for activities when conducted by federal agencies versus conducted at the state level. There's wording in HIPAA about may report as opposed to shall report. In FERPA recently, we've been having don't report. And finally, I mentioned the issue that practice is not in fact defined in 45 CFR 46. So first, exempt research. If the activity is public health practice, it's actually not research, and as such, it doesn't fall under 45 CFR 46. And it's the state that makes the determination if the activity is practice or research, not an IRB. In fact, if there is research, then there in fact are six categories of exempt research. But states are not asking IRBs to exempt their activity. The IRB is not involved if it's public health practice. The next one is principal investigator. researchers who get research grants typically have a PI, or principal investigator, responsible for the activities proposed in the grant, and many of these grants are specifically awarded to a PI, not to an institution. And if the PI leaves, he takes the grant with him. In contrast, public health agencies that obtain grants from CDC and other federal governments get the grant to the agency, not to a specific person. And so if, for example, CDC awards, TB prevention and control, immunization grant awards, HIV, STD, obesity, arthritis, diabetes, breast cancer early detection treatment, cancer registries, tobacco, early childhood lead detection and prevention, all of those grants are in fact competitively solicited from states, but when they're awarded to that state or municipal government, not to a person. And if the person leaves, the grant stays with the institution. The next one has to do with subject selection. The Belmont Report devotes one of its three parts of Part C to applications. And it's the applications of general principles to the conduct of research that leads to consideration of informed consent, risk-benefit assessment, and the selection of subjects of research. The principle of justice gives rise to the moral requirements that there be fair procedures and outcomes in the selection of research subjects. So in fact, compare the difference in subject selection between a placebo-controlled, double-blinded drug treatment or vaccine efficacy study compared to what happens when patients become self-selected because they get botulism or they get E. coli from a foodborne outbreak or a petting zoo, and public health intervenes to try to figure out the source, determine who's at risk, and intervene. The issues of consent are also very different. Disease reporting is conducted actually with the consent of the body politic through open governmental processes of enacting laws, regulations, rules, and administrative procedures. And so, in fact, public health practice routinely collects information on individuals who did not specifically volunteer to participate. They didn't provide individual informed consent, but the disease reporting occurs under the authority of state government. In addition, states routinely exercise police powers and daily public health practice involving things like restaurant inspection, isolation and quarantine and restriction of movement of people with tuberculosis, dealing with animal control and rabies. And it's not possible to turn over these public health authorities to an IRB. So if a state goes through a legal process to make birth defects reportable and create a birth defects registry, it does so under those authorities of the Constitution and open governmental processes where they are also open to challenge. But it can't just appoint an IRB and ask the IRB, is it okay that we're reporting birth defects once the rulemaking has occurred in an open process to create that requirement? Public health practice conducted by the states can be research when it's practiced by the states, it can be research when conducted by federal agencies. It's because the authority for public health is reserved to the states under the U.S. Constitution, and federal agencies don't have similar authority for public health practice. There have been specific examples of this, which have been reviewed and approved by the Office of Human Research Protection, that include things like the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey and the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which, when conducted by states, are routine activities of public health practice, but in fact are research at CDC when they work on the federal issues. For HIPAA, we've heard a little bit about that, and HIPAA provides language to permit ongoing public health practice, including disease reporting. HIPAA has the use of may, but that people may continue to report contained in the regulations, and it was a great source of confusion. But the reason it used the language may was to indicate that reporting was not prohibited under HIPAA, but in fact, because HIPAA is a federal regulation, HIPAA could not use the word shall report. Reporting is a function at the state level. Finally, FERPA. FERPA is sort of an extreme example of finding the wrong problem, creating the wrong solution, and misapplying it. But the Family Education Rights Privacy Act was passed in 1974, and at that time, nobody had a clue about the changes which would occur in the roles of schools in providing health care and public health protection. But in fact, FERPA has no provision for public health purposes. There's a provision that schools under FERPA can report information in an emergency, but there's no definition of an emergency. And in the last few years, we've seen administrative new restrictive interpretations by the Department of Education, which in fact instruct healthcare providers not to report diseases under state reporting laws. They instruct schools not to share immunization records with state immunization registries, and they have actually refused to provide information to state public health authorities in the face of outbreaks of foodborne diseases. A result of these interpretations was actually has been very harmful to existing birth defect surveillance. So finally, synergism. Research and practice have powerful systems to protect individual autonomy and rights. These systems draw their legitimacy from different legal authorities, but together they offer robust protections and accountability for both practice and research. And I've made available just an access for those interested in a monograph done by CSDE, Public Health Practice versus Research. It was published electronically May 24, 2004. It's available free and can be downloaded off the web from these addresses, and I'd be very happy to make sure that you have access to this because I think we're going to make these PowerPoints available. Thank you very much.